Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello from the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. And welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program that helps you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz. It's Sunday, December 27th, 2015. On this day in 1983, Pope John Paul II visited Mehmet Ali Agca in prison and personally forgave him for the 1981 attack on him in St. Peter Square. The Pope was shot but survived just barely. Today on the program, we'll tell you how to talk in American English about an event that began in the past and continues into the present. Then, as we always do on Sundays, we will bring you words and their stories. This week, we will explain the meaning of the interesting and useful expression Achilles' heel. And finally, as we do every Sunday, we will present People in America. Today we will tell you about the life of Wilma Rudolph, at one time the fastest woman in the world. So you can see, we have a lot for you today. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Now, let's learn about how to talk about an event that began in the past and continues into the present. In English, we often use prepositions to place a noun, pronoun, or noun phrase in time. This way we can communicate the passage of time. One common problem that English learners face is how to use prepositions of time. Two of the most common prepositions of time are for and since. English learners often have difficulties with these two prepositions because their native languages may use prepositions differently. Consider the following sentences. I've been traveling for 3 years. I've been traveling since 2012. Today, Pete Musto and John Russell teach us why you should use for in the first sentence and since in the second sentence.
In English, We use the preposition for to talk about an amount of time or space. The amount of time could be seconds, minutes, hours, days, months, or even years. The amount of time does not need to be exact. You could use for when you are talking about vague periods of time, like for the weekend, for ages, or for a long time. The important point is that for is used to specify a period of time. In English, the basic formula for using for is this: for plus a period of time. For can be used when talking about the past, present, or future. Here are three example sentences that use similar vocabulary, but use different verb tenses. Last year, I traveled for 3 weeks. I am traveling for 3 weeks. Next year, I will travel for 3 weeks. Regardless of the verb tense, the preposition for is still followed by a period of time.
You can hear examples of for plus a period of time in many songs. For example, in the popular movie Frozen, the character Anna sings,
"For years I've roamed these empty halls."
You heard the singer say, "for years." She says "for" because the word "years" refers to a period of time. The prepositional phrase "for years" tells how long the singer has roamed the empty halls.
In English, we use since to refer to a point of time. Since can refer to a point after a specific time or event in the past. Or it can refer to a particular point beginning sometime in the past and continuing until the present time. The particular point in time could be anything: last Tuesday, 2008, or midnight, for example. The important point is that since is used with a particular point in time. The basic formula for using since is this: since plus a particular point in time. In sentences with since, we usually use perfect tenses. When using since, we normally use present perfect and past perfect tenses in the main clause of the sentence. You wouldn't use since when you are talking about the future because, by definition, since refers to a specific point in the past. Here are two examples in the present perfect tense. It has been raining since 8 a.m. I have been walking since 10 p.m.
You can hear the word since in many popular songs. Here is the group The Temptations using the preposition since in "Since I Lost My Baby." In the song, since is followed by "I lost my baby." This means that the singer lost someone he loves. Because he lost the person he loves at a specific point in time, you use the preposition since.
Remember, for is used with a period of time. Since is used to refer to a specific point in time. You can use for and since with similar verb tenses if you wish. Here are two examples. I have been walking for 5 hours. I have been walking since 10 p.m. We have lived here for 20 years. We have lived here since 1985. In the example sentences, both for and since show an event that began in the past and continues into the present. But please remember this: for can be used with other verb tenses, including the future. I hope that you remember this lesson for a long time.
Thanks, Pete and John. John Russell wrote this story for VOA Learning English. Now, as we do every Sunday, we bring you words and their stories. Here is Anna Mateo to tell us about the expression Achilles' heel.
The Greek poet Homer has given us many phrases. A famous one is Achilles' heel. On your body, your Achilles' heel is the tendon on the back of your ankle. In spoken English, your Achilles' heel is your weak spot. You can say either Achilles' heel or Achilles' heel. Both are correct. The Greek story of Achilles' heel is the one Homer tells in the long poem called the Iliad. Here is how the story goes. When Achilles was a baby, his mother bathed him in the river Styx. She believed the river had magical powers. Bathing her son in its waters, she thought, would make Achilles immortal, deathless, like a god. But one part of his body did not get wet, his heel, where his mother held him. His heel, therefore, was the one spot where Achilles could be hurt. Achilles grew up. He became a great warrior. During the Trojan War, he fought with the Greek army. None of the Trojan weapons was able to hurt Achilles. The god Apollo, however, knew of Achilles' weak spot. Apollo told the prince of Troy, named Paris, all about it. While not actually written in the Iliad, legend says Paris shot an arrow at Achilles' heel and killed him. We all have an Achilles' heel. Even the toughest among us has a weak spot. This weakness may change as we get older. For many young people, their ego or overconfidence could be their Achilles' heel. For others, perhaps greed is their Achilles' heel. If I am trying to lose weight but love to eat ice cream, you could say that my love of ice cream is my Achilles' heel. And for many people, love is their Achilles' heel. Love leaves us helpless. Love makes us weak. People in love may find themselves doing foolish things. They may open themselves up to hurt or embarrassment. And a person who is head over heels in love is really in a weak position. This phrase, however, does not come from Greek literature. It was first used in the 14th century to mean turning a cartwheel or somersault. Today, head over heels means something that is not in its natural state, or something that is felt very deeply or strongly. It is usually used to describe someone who has fallen, possibly foolishly, in love. Head over heels gives a clear picture of one who has fallen deeply and passionately in love. Close your eyes and picture what a person may look like if he or she is spinning like a wheel, turning over and over. That is head over heels. Let's hear this expression used in an example.
Hey, have you noticed something different about John recently?
What do you mean?
Well, he is usually such a good student, but lately he never has his assignments done, and he seems unable to focus in class.
Well, you know he has a new girlfriend, and he is head over heels in love with her.
Oh, that explains why he has been acting so strange lately.
Perhaps being head over heels in love has never been your Achilles' heel, but you can probably imagine how powerful the feeling is.
Thanks, Anna. Now it is time for our popular series, People in America. Today we tell about Wilma Rudolph, the first American woman to win 3 gold medals in 1 Olympics. Here are Steve Ember and Barbara Klein.
They called her the Black Pearl, the Black gazelle and the fastest woman in the world. In 1960, Wilma Rudolph became the first American woman to win 3 gold medals in 1 Olympics. She was an extraordinary American athlete. She also did a lot to help young athletes succeed. Wilma Rudolph was born in 1940 in St. Bethlehem, Tennessee. She was born too early and only weighed 2 kilograms. She had many illnesses when she was very young, including pneumonia and scarlet fever. She also had polio, which damaged her left leg. When she was 6 years old, she began to wear metal leg braces because she could not use that leg.
Wilma Rudolph was born into a very large, poor African-American family. She was the 20th of 22 children. Since she was sick most of the time, her brothers and sisters all helped to take care of her. They took turns rubbing her crippled leg every night. They also made sure she did not try to take off her leg braces. Every week, Wilma's mother drove her to a special doctor 80 kilometers away. Here, she got physical treatments to help heal her leg. She later said, "My doctors told me I would never walk again. My mother told me I would. I believed my mother."
Soon, her family's attention and care showed results. By the time she was 9 years old, she no longer needed her leg braces. Wilma was very happy because she could now run and play like other children. When she was 11 years old, her brothers set up a basketball hoop in the backyard. After that, she played basketball every day. As a teenager, Wilma joined the girls' basketball team at Burt High School. C.C. Gray was the coach who supervised the team. He gave her the nickname Skeeter. She did very well in high school basketball. She once scored 49 points in one game, which broke the Tennessee state record. Many people noted that Wilma was a very good basketball player and a very good athlete. One of these people was Ed Temple, who coached the track team of runners at Tennessee State University. Ed Temple asked C.C. Gray to organize a girls' track team at the high school. He thought Wilma Rudolph would make a very good runner. She did very well on the new track team.
Wilma Rudolph went to her first Olympic Games when she was 16 years old and still in high school. She competed in the 1956 Games in Melbourne, Australia. She was the youngest member of the United States team. She won a bronze medal, or third place, in the sprint relay event. In 1957, Wilma Rudolph entered Tennessee State University, where she joined the track team. The coach, Ed Temple, worked very hard for the girls on the team. He drove them to track competitions and made improvements to the running track with his own money. However, he was not an easy coach. For example, he would make the members of the team run one extra time around the track for every minute they were late to practice. Wilma Rudolph trained hard while in college. She did very well at her track competitions against teams from other colleges. In 1960, She set the world record for the fastest time in the 2,000-meter event. She said, "I ran and ran and ran every day, and I acquired this sense of determination, this sense of spirit that I would never, never give up, no matter what else happened."
That same year, Wilma Rudolph went to the Olympics again, this time in Rome, Italy. She won 2 gold medals, first place in the 100-meter and the 200-meter races. She set a new Olympic record of 23.2 seconds for the 200-meter dash. Her team also won the gold medal in the 400-meter sprint relay event, setting a world record of 44.5 seconds. These 3 gold medals made her one of the most popular athletes at the Rome Games. These victories made people call her the world's fastest woman.
Following a stunning victory in the 100 meters final in a time of 11 seconds, which would have been a world record but for the wind speed, Rudolph destroyed the field in the 200 meters to claim her 2nd gold medal.
Wilma Rudolph received a lot of attention from the press and the public, but she did not forget her teammates. She said that her favorite event was the relay because she could share the victory with her teammates Martha Hudson, Lucinda Williams, and Barbara Jones. All 4 women were from Tennessee State University. The Associated Press named Rudolph the U.S. Female Athlete of the Year. She also appeared on television many times. Sports fans in the United States and all over the world loved and respected her. She said, "The feeling of accomplishment welled up inside of me, 3 Olympic gold medals. I knew that was something nobody could ever take away from me, ever."
Wilma Rudolph was a fine example for many people inside and outside the world of sports. She supported the civil rights movement, the struggle for equality between white and black people. When she came home from the Olympics, she told the governor of Tennessee that she would not attend a celebration where white and black people were separated. As a result, her homecoming parade and dinner were the first events in her hometown of Clarksville that white people and black people were able to attend together. After she retired from sports, Wilma Rudolph completed her education at Tennessee State University. She got her bachelor's degree in elementary education and became a teacher. She returned to coach the track team at Burt High School. She also worked as a commentator for women's track competitions on national television. In 1963, she married her high school boyfriend, Robert Eldridge. They had 4 children, but later ended their marriage. Wilma Rudolph won many important athletic awards. She was voted into the Black Athletes Hall of Fame and the United States Olympic Hall of Fame. She was also voted into the National Track and Field Hall of Fame. In 1977, she wrote a book about her life called Wilma. She wrote about her childhood problems and her athletic successes. NBC later made the book into a movie for television.
Rudolph said her greatest success was creating the Wilma Rudolph Foundation in 1981.
This organization helped children in local communities to become athletes. She always wanted to help young athletes recognize how much they could succeed in their lives. She said, "The triumph can't be had without the struggle, and I know what struggle is. I have spent a lifetime trying to share what it has meant to be a woman first in the world of sports so that other young women have a chance to reach their dreams." Rudolph also influenced many athletes. One of them was another African-American runner, Florence Griffith Joyner. In 1988, Griffith Joyner became the second American woman to win 3 gold medals in 1 Olympics. She went on to win a total of 6 Olympic medals. Wilma Rudolph was very happy to see other African American female athletes succeed. She said, "I thought I'd never get to see that. Florence Griffith Joyner, every time she ran, I ran."
Wilma Rudolph died of brain cancer in 1994 in Nashville, Tennessee. She was 54 years old. She influenced athletes, African Americans, and women around the world. She was an important example of how anyone can overcome barriers and make their dreams come true.
This People in America program was written by Aaron Braswell. It was produced by Katie Weaver and narrated by Steve Ember and Barbara Klein. We thank them all. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. We want to hear what interests you. Tell us what you want to hear about. You may hear stories about your interests on a future show. Send us a letter or a postcard. Our postal address is VOA Learning English, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. And, of course, you can email us. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. And please know that we read every message you send us. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.